Welcome to episode 71 of Girl Take the Lead, where each week we explore womanhood and leadership, and I'm your host, Yo Canny. In episode 70, we had our second conversation about habits, and you may remember I wondered about James Clear's point that we tend to imitate the habits of three social groups: family and friends, the many, and the powerful. He also said, if a behavior can get us approval, respect, and praise, we find it attractive. And I had the question, is this him advocating people-pleasing? So I went to an expert on the subject, Dr. Eileen S. Cohen, author of When It's Never About You, The People Pleaser's Guide to Reclaiming Your Health, Happiness, and Personal Freedom. Isn't that a great subtitle? Dr. Eileen, as she likes to be called, is also the author of the book we discussed in episode 61 about forgiveness. I liked that book so much, I asked her if she'd come talk to us about her other book. And so here we are. We had a terrific conversation exploring people-pleasing. And you know, for full disclosure, I want you to know that I am a recovering people-pleaser. About 23 years ago, I was made aware of the fact that I was trying to please my parents, my husband, my children, trying to make everybody happy, and I couldn't make anybody happy. The only person I can make happy is myself. So this episode really hit home for me and a lot of my behaviors. So I wanted to share it with you, and I hope you enjoy the listen. Here you go. Okay. So Dr. Eileen, thank you again for being here at for Girl Take the Lead podcast. We are so excited to have you, and congratulations on your great book.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Yeah. And let's begin by introducing yourself, and if you would, why this book?
Well, I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist and author. I was blogging for a long time, you know, writing articles and also seeing clients that identified as people pleasers, perfectionists, and something I call overfunctioning. And so I was working with that clientele for a while. And also I had personal experience being, I'm a people pleaser for many years. So it just made sense to me to write a book that I had personal experience in, but also professional experience. And so I can reach a broader audience.
Well, I definitely related to people pleasing. That was, I loved your book, the forgiveness workbook. I loved that. And when I saw this book too, I went, oh my gosh, it would be a dream to have you on our show. So I'm so glad you're here. And when I've mentioned this to other people that we were going to cover this topic, they were like, oh my God, that is so me. So I think a lot of people relate to people pleasing, and it definitely, you know, is a problem. You talk about the goal being self-full living. So I want to just, because sometimes in audio, it doesn't translate as well. I'm just going to say again, listeners, it's self-full. Little bit different than what we're used to seeing here. So maybe you could talk a little bit about that, how you came up with that and what it means.
Well, so myself included, a lot of people pleasers have a hard time with the idea that they're going to be selfish. And so this kind of shifts and reframes that idea that makes it more digestible for them, and including myself. This is a word that came up in my own personal development and therapy, where it's kind of balancing. It's balancing, you know, prioritizing your needs, but also still remaining connected to others. So it's giving you a little bit of both. You're not being selfish in doing this, but you're also can still be there for other people in your life. So it shifts that idea. And shows you the importance of actually being for yourself, thinking for yourself, living from yourself versus always doing for others, and how that benefits you and also your relationships.
How does it show up in people? You know, I know for me, sometimes with people pleasing, I'm like unaware that I'm actually doing it.
Right. Right. It's very automatic. And I think, I mean, it starts pretty young. We all have this kind of, it's in us, innate focus on others. Are, you know, when we're born, we have this dependency on others. And depending on what environment we grow up in, we might have gotten the message that in order to survive or keep things coming or think, you know, have everything be okay and manage these relationships, you need to focus on the other people and what you can do to kind of mitigate any kind of thing. So this develops pretty early, and then you kind of repeat that in other relationships. And it could be so automatic without realizing that that's what you're doing, because the goal for a people pleaser is, what can I do to keep the peace, to calm things down? It's not about prioritizing yourself or what is, you know, your own goals. It's all about everybody else. I mean, it depends. There's degrees, I think. You can still have a certain level of self and goals and priorities, but if somebody else is upset enough or loud enough, their needs or whatever they want might be more important to you than your own in those moments. We're born with this desire for individuality and togetherness. So we have that. But with pleasers, they lean more towards too much togetherness. You know, their behaviors are based on, what can I do to make this relationship? They put it all on themselves. What can I do to fit in with what my family thinks is best, or what my best friend wants, where she wants to go for dinner, or, you know, they'll let me not rock the boat. Where other people might lean towards more individual, which might look like rebellious or going against the grain just because your family thinks a certain way or your friend. But really, selfful living is about balancing that. How can I still be my individual person, but also be part of a group without giving that up? Which can be, as you said, so automatic, especially in times of tension or stress.
Right. So that balance then is about maybe exercising kindness, giving, but not losing yourself in the process. You know, that's where it gets a little tricky, I think, for people, because you can always say, oh, I'm being so kind, you know, I'm being so giving. But what you're, I think, kind of challenging us to do is to look at what's behind it.
Right. Is it really coming from something you want to do? Or are you just doing it to possibly be, look like a kind, nice person, or to make the other person happy, or to manage possibly that somebody that has very overreactive? So a lot of people that I've seen that are people pleasers, a lot of the times their parents, at least one was an alcoholic, or one of them's a highly overreactive. So a lot of the times that behavior was built at in a way of, okay, let me do everything possible to make this other person happy, or not to cause a rift, because if you have an alcoholic parent, you know, it's already chaotic. Be difficult. It's a very uncertain. So it's really the only thing the person has control over is what can I do just to not cause any rifts? And can I not then, what can I do to not have these overreactions? And they kind of internalize that. And then that plays out in the rest of their lives. And then they're making decisions based off of that, based off of how other people are going to respond to them. Instead of, okay, is this truly what I want to do? Do I really want to volunteer for all the things at my kid's school and always be the first one to step into things? Like, is it really part of my, and then I'm burnt out later. Do right. I really pick up the slack from someone else because they don't want to do it? So I could look like a nice person and make sure they aren't, you know, bothered by it. You know, it takes time to readjust, but to really slow down and think about that, you know, get clearer about what's my position in this relationship, or how much do I want to do? What kind of person do I want to be?
When we look at leadership, you and I talked about this, like one of the hardest things when we're leading people, or that we are in a situation, we're afraid of conflict. And I guess, you know, can you talk a little bit more about that? Because I think in a lot of business situations, people are like walking around on eggshells, not going direct, lots of ambiguity.
Right. So yeah, if you have a fear of conflict, then you're not, it's hard to be a good leader. If you're then basing how you direct and lead off of how you, what kind of response you're going to get from the other person, not really what you think is best. So if you're training somebody or you're trying to show them the ropes, but you're scared of their reaction, or you don't want to hurt their feelings, that's a big one, you know, not want to hurt someone's feelings. How do you really lead from there? So selfful living and working on people pleasing is working on also managing your own fear around others' reactivity to you and their disappointment. So, and in being a leader, just saying, okay, how is it focusing on yourself? What kind of leader do I want to be? What's important here? And saying and doing what needs to be done, because that's your thinking behind it, not based off of, oh, hurting anybody's feelings or not trying to get a certain reaction from the other person.
Yeah, I think you mentioned a few things in your book, like don't bury your feelings. Remember that conflict is inevitable. Stop overestimating other people's anger. Right? That's a big one.
That's a big one. That's hard to change, especially if you've had overreactive parents or family member or caretaker. Our brains register facial expressions, movement, tone very quickly. So your brain could be picking up on a possible threat, you know, like, oh, this person looks disappointed, and you're going to feel that physiological response that you did when you were growing up. And you might very well overestimate how someone's going to respond to you based on your past experiences, which could have you just avoid it, not want to deal with it or do what you can just to get rid of that fear. But it's not helping you develop, grow, or teach yourself that, okay, not everybody's going to react this way.
Yeah.
It shows you, like when I started getting out of my people pleasing and I started speaking more truthfully, I was very nervous. And I was very shocked that most people really didn't react the way that my fear had told me they were going to react. And that helped me over time to keep on speaking up versus avoiding situations based on that fear of those kinds of overreactions.
There's also a breakthrough once you begin to articulate for yourself and advocate for yourself. I know I've seen it in people where tears actually come breaking through that fear, finding your voice, speaking into it, and being strong in it. And those things are just so, like one of our first episodes was about finding your voice. And after I had been in business for so many years, I didn't know anymore my own personal voice. I was so used to people pleasing within an organization because, you know, your performance evaluation is built on it. You're trying to advance your career. You know, of course you're going to be nice. You're not going to upset people, all of that. And you lose yourself.
Right. Right. And then when you do start finding your voice, it's scary. Because when everything else you were doing was just to manage that fear, the anxiety that comes with it, it's really, when it comes down to it, it's just avoiding.
Yes.
And hiding. And when you start to speak up, there's that fear behind it. And there's also those beliefs behind it that oh, it's going to make you a mean person or unlikable person. But if you find a balance, you know, it's not about being rude to people or nasty, but if you could find a way to kind of manage those fears and speak your truth in an articulate way, like a lot of really good leaders do, or bosses or coworkers, of, you know, getting clear about whatever it is, whatever your role is in the company and what people can expect from you, it helps the relationship flourish. You are a pleaser in the workplace, and then one of your coworkers keeps giving you work that's not yours, or, you know, or they're doing something that you really don't feel comfortable with, and they don't know what's going to happen. Over time, you're just going to withdraw distance from that person. You might become overwhelmed. You might be thinking about just quitting your job. You're not facing what's going on in that workplace, the environment, and trying to deal with it, which would be more productive. Depending, I'm not saying that just because you face it or voice that things are necessarily going to change. You know that you're not playing.
And you know your truth about it.
Right.
And what behavior and what action you take, I think, will be dictated by your particular situation.
Right. And if you very might well leave that job or that role or a relationship, but if you keep showing up as that person that buries their feelings, that isn't being truthful, that's just trying to do what you need to keep the peace, you're going to keep getting the same result most of the time.
Yeah.
Because people don't know. Or you might match up with, a lot of the time, pleasers match up with the louder person, the more controlling person, because that fits. They are used to taking control, taking the lead, being the ones that make all the decisions. And they fit more with someone that seems to be easygoing, goes with the flow, doesn't, you know, they don't make room for themselves in the relationship. So it becomes like my book title, it's never about you. It's always about the other person. You're not to blame particularly for that, but you are playing a part in that based on those, you know, those behaviors.
Definitely. I can see so much of what you're saying and relating to it and seeing it in other people. It's so hard to see it in yourself sometimes, just so hard. And then when the layers start peeling away and you're digging in to perhaps, as you said, how things were in our families and where this all generated from. And I have little talks with myself that say, you're safe now. You don't have to protect and worry and do those things. You're okay. You're safe now. Mm-hmm. And that helps me a great deal. Are there other things that some of your patients come to you with and you're able to help them through some of this?
So as a marriage and family therapist, I always take a look at the person and their context, which is their upbringing, their family. Sometimes I go back 3 generations and you'll see that there's a lot of patterns that are repeated in relationships. So when it comes to people pleasing, you might see in a marriage, one person always accommodating, giving in, and the other person kind of running the show. And then you'd see that through the generations, or where the children were the pleasers and the parents ran the show, or the kids run the, you know,
it's, yeah, yeah.
See it through the, and these are all natural things that people in general do. There's tons of different things we do, but to manage these relationships in our lives, attention and what's being brought up. And there's other variables to it, whether there was certain stressors or trauma or whatever was going on in those period of time. But I like to take a look at the person in their context so they can see, where did this behavior develop? Because it's not necessarily that the problems of the past are causing them to have these issues now. It's them recreating the past in their current relationships that are creating these issues. So let me see myself in context. What behaviors am I doing that I want to change that are perpetuating these patterns? Mm-hmm. And one of them, which could be people pleasing, which is really you're hyper-focusing on others and managing these relationships through forgetting about yourself, through forgetting your own needs, through ignoring your own emotions and goals and desires in life for the purpose of the harmony of the relationship. So that's what I would do with the client. See where it drives, and then small steps. What can you do to make changes? And then also talking about benefits that it would have to the relationships. So for example, if you're the pleaser in a relationship and you're always doing for others, it's, you're also in a way enabling other people to not step up to be themselves. For example, I'm seeing a married couple where when she's very uncomfortable, the husband feels it and he takes it on. What can I do? What can I do? And now lately she's feels like very low self-esteem, like she can't do anything. It's very hard for her to complete tasks. So they're, but it's not blaming one person. It's seeing in this interaction of his wanting to make everything better and keep stepping in when she's uncomfortable. And then instead of her being able to build that muscle, she just gets, and then the more she gets upset, the more he steps in. But now guess what? He's overwhelmed and stressed out.
Yeah.
And she's feeling low self-esteem and like she isn't able to do anything for herself by just looking at the patterns and seeing what part you're playing with it and how, and in it, and how you can make changes to that.
I think you're saying the first thing is to become aware. Right. Mm-hmm. To slow it down. Like you said before, slow it down enough so that you can examine. I know I do a lot of writing myself, like in the morning, I try and just sit down, take a few minutes. What's going on? Write. Mm-hmm. Just see what comes up. And I think that's helped me be a better observer.
Well, awareness is definitely the first step. You have to be aware. You have to be willing to look at yourself. I think blame, it has a bad rap, like, oh, if I'm looking at myself, my behaviors, if I'm playing a part in this, then I'm to blame. Uh-huh. I help my clients become aware of the interactional patterns, the context, that they're just, they're a part, but that's the only part you have control over. It's not to take the blame. So it's also slowing down to observe that piece without feeling that guilt and judgment. So it's a lot, it's kind of similar to mindfulness or meditation of slowing down, taking a look at your behaviors. What do you automatically do when you're stressed or anxious in your relationships? Just to look at it, do anything about it, just to notice it. And like you're like a researcher going to a new country or something, just observing their culture and just to jot, and they can write it down, just take note of it. And then you'll see those kind of patterns everywhere. You know, it's not, you have different content or different situations, but underneath it, what drives it, once you slow down, you become aware. And then you say, oh, wow, this is driving a lot of the different things I'm doing. And it's, it becomes more tangible where you can tackle it. And then you feel more control over making changes.
Would you say that people pleasing is kind of a symptom of other things?
Right. Every single thing that my clients come to see me with is a symptom of the larger system of family, broader context, and of their relationships. You can't have people pleasing without your relationships and contacts, but for sure, it's doing what you need to do in that moment to just manage whatever's coming up, these difficult relationships. This is what you've learned has helped over the years to just manage that tension. But is it still working for you? Is it still helpful? When is it now creating more problems? Maybe it did help you survive an abusive household, an alcoholic parent, you know, you got criticized less, you got beaten less, you got ignored, you know, you would learn how to take care of yourself, but maybe now it's causing more issues.
Oh, this has been so interesting for me. You can tell I'm just like riveted by everything you're saying. It's like, yes, yes, yes. And I think our listeners will be too, with so many great things that you've told them. You have a checklist, which I encourage all of our listeners to go check out for becoming self-full. One that I think is interesting is respect your inner self. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Sure. So part of this work, which is hard, is looking inward and respecting the way you view things, your needs. What are those? We don't know when you're a people pleaser, you know, really it's a process of, so it depends on how long, you know, this has been going on for, but you're not respecting yourself by always jumping in to help, by always doing for others, by not accomplishing your own goals and wants, by not having any needs in relationships because it's always focused on the other. You're kind of treating yourself the way you would never treat other people. So it's respecting yourself is really just shifting that focus to you and all the respect you believe you're giving to others and giving it to yourself, learning about yourself, and then having those behaviors align with that. I think that's kind of respecting.
And do you think that self-care shows up as something to help us address being a people pleaser?
So I write about this a bit with self-care being this trendy topic. Yeah. I'm not against it. I'm loving my facials and massages. Those are great. However, if you're utilizing self-care as a way just to deal with being burnt out, so you can just go jump back in to doing your people pleasing, you know, I'm going to just overwhelm my plate and then go for a facial, massage, lunch with friends, whatever it is, check out with a TV show, and then go back to doing what I was doing that's not useful. I don't know how helpful self-care is. I really see self-care as this, creating a life that you want and you desire and that you don't need these breaks from. You know, a life that does include yourself and other people, doing things you enjoy, not just to do it to because you're so burnt out, you can't deal with it and you need to check out.
That's great to hear. I mean, I hadn't thought of it that way. So that's very, I think, helpful for us to take a look at how we're using self-care as a way to do more. We're quite funny human beings here.
Even if when we're drinking, when we're doing behaviors that aren't so desirable, you're just doing what you need to do to manage that negative feeling, that tension, anxiety. So you could just jump back into doing what wasn't so in the first place. So
probably obscures too, right? Like what's really going on.
Right. It's hard because it's hard to change. Yeah. I know because I've done it and I've seen clients. It's not easy.
Yeah, I get it. Well, is there anything else that we didn't cover that you'd like to?
I would say, you know, that like I, you know, repeat that this work isn't easy. The most important is self-awareness, slowing down. And then, you know, you don't have to jump into making changes. These behaviors are there for a reason. It's good to evaluate, see, it's not a race. There are helpful resources out there. Like, you know, my book, When It's Never About You, and I have a journal, but also there's so many resources on people pleasing. You know, if you really do think that this is something that you're dealing with, it's really tough to live that way. And if you are noticing you're burnt out, that probably means that things have just gotten so overwhelming and you just don't know what to do now about it because how you've always dealt with problems isn't working. So
yeah.
I would just say, slow down, take a look and evaluate. Then you can decide what you want to do with it.
And wonder how our listeners can get in touch with you, because I think they're going to be interested to learn more.
So I have a website, Dr. Spelled Out, then Eileen, ILENE.com. I have Instagram that I try to post on as much as I can. Especially with things about people pleasing, which is at Dr. Spelled Out Eileen, and also Facebook. But and then you can reach me from there if you have questions, or if you Google me, I have tons of articles online and things like that.
Well, again, thank you for coming and for being on the show. One question before we go. Do you think this affects women more than men?
Yes, in my experience and in my, just my audience, I also think it's part of the culture, many cultures of women that's been ingrained in us, you know, for others, for your family, for your children, for your husband, spouse, whoever, you know, it's the caretaking. And we might have seen our own mothers do it, you know. And I'm not saying I've seen men as well, but I have seen it predominantly in women because I think it's been part of how we see, you know, womanhood, you know, being that, oh, we're here for our husband to, you know, that's been the history. Yeah. Of being a wife and being a mother is you have to be selfless. So there's that idea behind it for sure.
And do you think that, and I know you're a millennial, so do you think that other millennials and Gen Zers are offering a different point of view on this? Like they're realizing that balance is important, that they need to become more aware.
I think it is changing, but it really depends on the family that you come from in the culture, because it's still very strong in certain circles, this idea. But I do think there has been changes, and that's focusing on, okay, let's not just push people to have prescribed roles. Let them figure out how they want to live, you know, not, and I think that plays into people pleasing of the group mentality. Let me do, you know, oh, you're supposed to be married by a certain age, have children, not have a career, whatever it is, depending. But I think the family still, believe it or not, highly does influence, you know, a person and how they view themselves. But I do think, depending on where you live, that there is this movement where especially women have more choice in how they want to live their lives. And it's not just focused on others or having these prescribed roles or, you know, not only about caretaking and things like that. But I think it's not as big as we hope.
Right. Okay. Well, I know I could probably come up with more questions before I let you go, but thank you again for being here and for covering such an important topic for us.
Thanks for having me. I enjoyed it. Thank you.
Thank you for listening today, and we sure hope you enjoyed this episode. If you did, please leave a comment where you listen to your podcasts. Join our public Facebook group, Girl Take the Lead, or visit our website, girltaketheleadpod.com. We also have a YouTube channel where your subscription would be appreciated. Once you're on YouTube, search at Girl Take the Lead. So the three takeaways from this episode were: one, pleasing behaviors usually start as a way for us to feel less anxious about our lives. Two, it's not selfish to be self-full. Seek a happy balance between being selfless and taking care of your own needs. And three, to help overcome any fear that you might have about confrontation, don't overestimate other people's anger. They could be fine hearing what you have to say. So we've got some great guests coming up. Andrea DeWitt will return. She was in episode 48, where we talked about her book, Name, Claim, and Reframe. And this time she's going to help address some questions I still have about female bullying. Yep, I'm not over it yet. I still have a nagging question she'll help us address. We also have Brenda Harrington, author of the book, Access Denied. And Brenda is a certified executive coach and founder of Adaptive Leadership Strategies and works with leaders globally. Also joining us is Kelly Davis. Kelly is co-host of a podcast, The Thesis Project, and she was in my Girl Scout troop. I totally love her and the work she's doing at the University of Oslo, Norway. Can't wait to tell you about it. Thanks for being here. Talk to you soon. Bye.